International.
Ici Radio-Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Hello everyone, it's very nice to have you with us once again for another edition of the program. I'm Keith Perron. Well, one country that's been in the news a lot lately is Syria. As you know, a number of countries have formed together a coalition and have been bombing ISIL in the region. Now, let's talk about radio and the important role that radio and other media is playing for people that are in Syria. We have this special report from Mae Francis.
صباح الخير مستمعينا أولى فقرات برنامج يسعد صباحك يا بلد جونا لليوم 14 تموز.
It's 10 a.m. in the Turkish city of Gaziantep, and radio presenter Mais Basha is midway through the morning program. Basha fields calls from listeners, discusses the latest soccer match, and reads the news.
شمال سوريا في إدلب 32-21 الجو صحو.
It's all pretty standard really, except it's not.
وسط سوريا صحو أيضا في حمص 32-19 وحما 34-22.
The station, which is called Nasaim Surya, isn't broadcasting to Gaziantep, Turkey's sixth largest city, but across the border into neighboring Syria. Gaziantep is 60 kilometers from the Turkish border, and the bustling Turkish city has become a de facto base for exiled Syrian media organizations. Nasaim Syria is one of many opposition media outlets with their base in Turkey. Program coordinator Wihad Weiss shows me around. The station has a staff of around 15 people.
You're 15? Almost 15, 17. We have some people, they are just new to media. They train themselves. It's, most of them, they used to be students at universities. This is the editing room.
This is the studio.
Yes. So this is the morning program called Good Morning Our Country, besides Sabahak Ya Balad. It's supposed to be 3 hours, but during Ramadan it's very hard for the announcer to speak for 3 hours. So now it's just 2 hours. It starts from 10 to 12 o'clock.
Okay, and what kind of things do you have in the morning program, like news and...
It includes news. We speak about economic, the prices of the Syrian pound today when you compare it with dollars, with euros. They have what happened today.
During the news bulletin, the show airs pieces from their reporters still inside Syria.
It's very hard for them. You know, every day we just worry. We hear bombs, attacks, airplanes. So we just call themselves, are you okay? Yes, we are okay. Every day, this is daily work.
The risks for journalists inside Syria are immense. Last year, the Committee to Protect Journalists named Syria as the most dangerous place in the world to be a reporter. Over 70 journalists have been killed reporting on the conflict. The majority of them have been Syrian. Reem Halabi is the director and founder of Nasaim Syria. She tells me that to understand why they take these risks, you have to go back to the beginning, the start of the revolution.
For 2 weeks there were no communication, no media, no electricity, no internet, and people wanted to know exactly what was happening inside Aleppo. But nobody knew because the media was controlled by the regime. The only thing I could use was the radio, so I turned on the radio to see if there was anything. All I heard was Turkish radio, and the coverage was good. I could hear them well in Aleppo. At this point, I thought, why don't we have a radio with a radio transmitter in Turkey, and people could know what is happening in this country?
It took a while for Rain to realize that goal. Instead, Nasaim Syria started with a small bureau in Aleppo.
We started with a small staff, four people, and we grew bigger each month.
Reem wasn't the only one with this idea. Syrian citizen journalists all over the country were documenting their revolution.
I'm from Aleppo, 25 years old.
Amru al-Halibi was one of these journalists. He was 23 when the uprising began.
Yeah, it started the first beginning of the revolution, so there was no one shooting videos for the protests, so I took my cell phone and I started to shoot videos, upload them on YouTube and broadcast live protests. It was amazing, so basically every video that I shooted was broadcasted on TV channels, major TV channels in Arabic media. Because we were making change, we were affecting on the media, the public opinion and everything. So basically we managed to affect the world, international community, our local community, and we really gave a great push to the revolution.
Back then, the Middle East was still in the heady grip of the Arab Spring. Many Syrians felt that Syria would be no different, that once the international community saw the evidence, they'd have to intervene.
Yeah. Well, actually, I started to shoot videos using my smartphone. It was really stupid. It was only 5 megapixels, sorry. And I was uploading them through my 3G. So sometimes my 3G will be off because I didn't pay the bill. So, and that's how it starts. Then after 3 months, someone gave me a really good cell phone. So I started to shoot more and more videos. And when the liberation started and we had liberated areas, then we got some funding for really great cameras.
Amro's reports were broadcast all over the world. But as the war dragged on, it became a whole lot more complicated. The opposition, which began as an inclusive military force of different brigades, fighting under the unifying name of the Free Syrian Army, began to splinter. New brigades were formed with a much more conservative outlook. And they weren't so kind to Syria's burgeoning new media. The most radical of these new players is the State of Iraq and the Levant, now known as the Islamic State. Back at the studios of Nasaim Syria, Reem Halabi explains to me what that meant for the media on the ground, for their small team at the Aleppo Bureau.
Our bureau in Aleppo is not afraid of aerial bombardment of the regime forces. The main fear became arrest and kidnapping from ISIS. So we closed our Aleppo office and our reporters on the ground worked alone from their houses. We use pseudonyms for them, which we have to change all the time.
Nasaim Syria isn't the only outlet struggling to fulfill an enormous task. Across town from the Nasaim Syria studios, I meet Rami Jara from Ana Press.
We gathered because we managed to sit on one table because we know each other's work. We know that everyone on this table is serious.
He's gathered with some other station directors to try and discuss the issues facing each media organization. There's Sirwan.
Yes, Sirwan Hussein, Arta FM.
From Arta FM, which broadcasts in the Kurdish north of the country, and...
My name is Adnan Haddad, Hara FM, that's currently broadcasting on the internet and in Aleppo.
Rami, Adnan and Sirwan are trying to establish an organization, which they've called Abraj, to aid stations in Syria as they face even greater logistical challenges keeping their reporters on air. Here's Adnan again.
being a media activist or with the media is considered to be a crime by most of the factions in Syria now, starting with the regime, who is, we consider to be the harshest of all, then moving to ISIS, moving to other fundamentalist groups, and even some of the, FSA brigades. What we're trying to do is we're trying to work in actually the most dangerous place in the world. We have to worry about each and every detail in terms of, getting the equipments and keeping them working. And you know that you can't simply just, install a transmitter and leave it there.
Transmitting on FM means that stations have to have radio transmitters inside Syria. The whole process, from smuggling them inside to protecting the transmitters once they're set up, is arduous. Nasaim Syria recently lost a transmitter in Aleppo to shelling. Other stations, like Ramiz Ana Radio, have had theirs stolen or broken by militants or looters.
In some areas, it's possible, but it means that you have to pay off people. You have to have a battalion that can secure it. We have ways of hiding the equipment. We have to buy more expensive equipment that's smaller, that we can hide in different places. Not putting them inside cows or anything, but there is a way that we're hiding them. And that means that means extra expenses, and that's the issue of independence again.
کسی المال آخرون اشتیه کسی بریاد رویه آرتا اف ام دنگیت هیویه ایوارت بخیر مالوا
ایوارت بخیر صفقان ایوار حمو گهدار بخیر به نرگز و شلیر به
سار
لبه باران اوی حاتن سر والاتیم
بلی براستی ام جیب هیوی
This is the media report on RN. I'm Richard Aidy, and you're listening to a report on the challenges of covering the Syrian conflict for a Syrian audience. Interestingly, the medium that's proving to be the most valuable and effective is radio, which means transmitters are crucial. Rami Jara, co-founder of ANA Radio, is planning a new one.
It would be located in an area called Khan Safra in Idlib, and it would, I can't give the exact location, but it would be somewhere there. It's a high area that's in between Idlib, Aleppo, Latakia, Homs and Hama. So this really covers most of the areas, and it reaches the coastal region, which is a vital area that the regime controls.
Broadcasting into regime-controlled areas is new for the station, and it requires a different kind of programming.
Exactly, but what this gives us is a responsibility to sort of adapt with our content to these areas. So we can't provide anti-regime content. We have to be very neutral, and I think a lot of comedy.
For Sirwan, the key has been getting the community involved. The war has shattered entire villages, and Sirwan hopes that radio, a medium that all over the world has flourished at a community level, can help bring those communities back together.
You know, we used to have only one source of information, and this source was in Damascus. It was a media which was influenced by the regime. And suddenly, now after starting the revolution inside Syria, now we have a new experience. People now have really a voice. They can make their own programs. We have young people who never had experience with media, with radio. Suddenly they are making programs. And so Syrians are making program for themselves, not for a regime, not for a political party, not for for the revolution, not for just for themselves.
And they're competing with much larger media operations. The Assad regime has the power of a well-oiled state-run media behind them. And the Islamic State has a huge media presence on social media, YouTube, and in the areas of Syria and Iraq that they control. These are not grainy cell phone videos or simple websites. The Islamic State have their own channels, radio stations, and even an online English language magazine. They produce high-quality content shot on top-of-the-line gear.
In the face of the dark wave of the Crusader force, the historical land of two rivers bore life to a mission that would transform the political landscape of the world.
This is an excerpt from Flames of War, a 55-minute film released by the group in September. A narrator speaks over images of war of George Bush. The video is one of hundreds produced by the group.
Thus, the war between Iman and Kufr was ignited.
The video is one of hundreds produced by the group. These videos are a large part of their recruitment strategy, and they are very keen to keep control of their image. If this means intimidating local journalists, then so be it. Mohammed, who doesn't want to use his full name, sits in a busy restaurant in Rahanley, a dusty border town 200 kilometers south of Gaziantep. Earlier this year, he was on a scouting trip for a new channel when he ran into the Islamic State.
There was a checkpoint. A checkpoint for ISIS, and they check our car. They found my laptop and a microphone. I tried to tell them that this microphone was not for me, it was for my friend. Then they found my camera and my two-way, so they said, "This means you're a media worker." He hit me with the butt of his rifle and made me go with him.
The fighters released Mohammed's driver and took him to their base.
They blindfolded me and they drove me for 30 to 45 minutes and put me in a room. They took all my stuff and an Egyptian guy came in. He asked for my Facebook and Skype accounts. He opened the accounts and let me for 3 hours. He came back with many accounts open on my laptop. He asked me, "How many accounts do you have?" I said they are my friend's accounts. And they said, "You're a liar," and began to beat me.
Mohammed was held for a week and subject to many more beatings. He was fed one meal a day and at night.
I realized there was another person taking a beating in the room next to me. I could hear him screaming, "Don't hit me, don't hit me." Every evening they would come into my room. On the final day at night time, one of them came into the room and said, "Come with us." But I couldn't walk, so a big guy came to carry me. And they put me in the trunk of their car. They drove me around 1.5 hours. And in the car, I was thinking of the ISIS execution videos I had seen. I was praying. I thought they were going to kill me. When we arrived, I thought, "This is where they're going to kill me." They let me, and I managed to untie my hands and took off my blindfold. And I started walking.
Since I began reporting this story, the Islamic State has taken even more ground. They publicly beheaded two American journalists and circulated brutal and graphic videos of their murders online. The Assad regime has continued fighting the opposition, and more than 15,000 civilians have been killed. Foreign journalists now are rarely able to report from on the ground. So most of the news you see coming out of Syria now, it's come from local reporters.
Freedom to us, especially, you know, being media activists, freedom to us is, you know, starting with the freedom of media. All kind of freedoms in Syria have been oppressed by the regime. And we know if we, you know, make sure at least the freedom of speech, the freedom of expression is, you know, kept alive, then we have hopes for, you know, other freedoms to be won.
Arta FM.
That was Mae Francis reporting on the radio scene in Syria. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
I only want you to find it. Just be the total journal.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
All right, now, before we get to Glenn Hauser's propagation forecast, I just want to tell you about some upcoming special programs that we're going to have very soon. On December the 26th, there's going to be a special edition of Media Network Plus looking at the lighter side of broadcasting, as well as another special program on January the 2nd, 2016. Now, the program that we're going to be presenting on the lighter side of broadcasting is going to be consisting of some radio bloopers and all kinds of interesting things that maybe we didn't pay attention to this past year. And also a couple of updates on some very odd stories that we have reported on. Now, if there's a clip that you have of a radio blooper that you have recorded and you'd like us to include it into the program, do send us an email with the MP3 and a little bit of description of what it is. All right? The clips could be up to 2 to 3 minutes long. Now, we may have to shorten it because our program is only 29 minutes, but we'll do our best to get as many in as we possibly can. Our email address is very, very easy. It's mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. And all contributions that will be used in the program, well, the people who did send them along will be getting a small thank you gift from us. So do send them along, and we'll do our best. The deadline for that is December the 21st. That's December the 21st. So you have about 2 weeks left to get that to us. Now, as for the program on January 2nd, 2016, well, I'm not going to tell you what it is yet. In fact, I think I'm going to leave it as a little bit of a surprise. Yes, a little bit of a surprise. You know, when it's ready, we'll let you know. We'll let you know. Or you just have to tune in and find out. All right. It's now time to take a look at propagation. So here is our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through December 12th. Normal at low and middle latitudes. Normal to fair at high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa. Magnetic conditions active to minor storms, December 11th. Active on December 12th. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely. MUF unstable. From Met Office, UK, solar activity expected to remain at very low or low levels through December 13th, with a 20% risk of moderate class flares. A new sunspot region has recently emerged onto the eastern limb of the visible disk, which may result in an increase in flare probabilities over the next few days. F.K. Yanda, OK1HH of the Czech Propagation Interested Group, says the geomagnetic field will be mostly quiet on December 11th, 16th, 24th, 25th, 28th. Quiet to unsettled on December 12th to 14th. Quiet to active December 15th, 26th, and 27th. Quiet on December 17th through 23rd and 30th. Active to disturbed December 29th. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field activity predominantly unsettled to active conditions expected until December 13th, with minor storm periods possible. Mostly quiet levels December 14th to 26th, with A and K indices mostly 5 and 2. Quiet to active conditions likely December 27th and 28th, with ANK indices peaking at 18 and 4. Unsettled to active conditions expected on January 1st, with minor storm levels likely January 2nd, ANK indices of 20 and 5. Solar flux tipping to 95 December 17th and 18th, up to only 100 December 19th to 26th, and down again to 95 on the 28th and 29th. William Hepburn's VHF, UHF microwave DX maps call for strong tropospheric ducting along the U.S. Gulf Coast through December 12th, extreme ducting between Mozambique and Madagascar through December 13th, all week along the northwest coast of Australia. The RSGB reminds us that Geminid's meteor shower peaks Sunday the 13th, so be prepared for some good meteor scatter QSOs, and I must add, FM DX bursts.
All right, thanks a lot, Glenn. Anyway, with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Just a quick reminder, next week we're going to have a regular program, which is for December the 19th. But the programs of December the 26th and January the 2nd are going to be two special editions of the programs. Now, what do we have planned for the 26th? Well, as I said, kind of a bloopers program. And then for January 2nd, I'm not going to tell you. You'll just have to tune in. Anyway, if you want to get in touch with us with your blooper clips that we can use on the 26th of December, you can send them to mnp@pcjmedia.com, mnp@pcjmedia.com. But I should tell you, it could be from any year. That could be from 2015 or even 1925. Yes, the whole gamut. It doesn't matter how old it is, as long as it's interesting and funny. Anyway, on behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Perron, wishing you well, hoping to see you again very soon. Until next time, 73 and 88 to the ladies.